Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, whatever it may be, wherever you are, as you tune in here. I'm your host, John Shomo. This is episode 29 of the podcast Then and Now. Today, we'll look at the facts for the week, birthdays, anniversaries, etc., for the week of September 16th through 22nd. Then we'll take on two or three current topics of note, and we'll finish with our three good questions segment. So let's get started. We'll start with September 16th. On September 16th, 1620, the Mayflower set sail from Plymouth, England. We know where it landed and began the settlement, if you will, of Europeans in New England. The General Motors Company Corporation, I guess, was founded in Detroit on September 16th, 1908. Play-Doh was introduced as a toy. I had Play-Doh as a kid. Play-Doh was introduced on September 16th, 1955. Both Dave Winfield in 1993 and Paul Molitor, 3 years later, recorded their 3,000th hit on September 16th, each while playing for the Minnesota Twins, not their original teams. But in both cases, they were Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul natives and got that hit playing in Minnesota for the Twins. September 16th is Independence Day in Mexico. Some birthdays of note, the late actress Lauren Bacall, born 100 years ago in 1924. The legendary blues guitarist B.B. King would have been 99 on September 16th. Elgin Baylor, one of those people we've been talking a lot lately about NBA top 10 lists, etc. He's one of those people that have kind of dropped off the radar and maybe shouldn't have. Elgin Baylor was a tremendous player out of Seattle University for the Los Angeles Lakers. Retired early in the season when they finally won the championship in 1971-72. So he never got a ring, but one of the greats of all time, way ahead of his time in terms of his athleticism. Elgin Baylor has passed away, unfortunately. He would have been 90 on September 16th. Hall of Famer, the Milwaukee Brewers great Robin Yount, will be 69. And Oral Hershiser, who won the Cy Young Award and everything else for the Dodgers when they won the World Series in 1988, helped Cleveland to the World Series in 1995. Oral Hershiser will be 66 on September 16th. Also, not forgetting her, Amy Poehler, the actress, comedian, will be 53. September 17th, a big day for us historians and government teachers. The U.S. Constitution was adopted by the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia on September 17, 1787. The Battle of Antietam in Maryland near the town of Sharpsburg, September 17, 1862, the bloodiest single day for the American military in our history. There were over 23,000 casualties at that place on that day. I've been there a couple of times. It's really something to see where that all happened and just incredible, the carnage that took place on one day. The American Professional Football Association, the forerunner, if you will, of the National Football League, was founded in Canton, Ohio on September 17th, 1920. They played first in the 1920 season in the fall of 1920. The first champions of that league was a team known as the Akron Pros. So if you want to stretch it a little bit, Akron was home to the first NFL champions. How about that? The great TV series based on a movie, MASH, premiered on CBS September 17th, 1972. It was on, I believe, for 11 or 12 seasons. One of the best TV series ever. Phil Jackson, who won, I think, 11 NBA titles as a coach, some with the Bulls with Michael Jordan, some with the Lakers with Kobe. Phil Jackson, 79, played for a couple of NBA title teams, too, with the Knicks, by the way. NASCAR great Jimmy Johnson, 49, on September 17th. And hockey great Alexander Ovechkin of the Washington Capitals will be 39. Moving to September 18th, Chile gained independence from Spain on that date in 1818. The U.S. Air Force was formed. Happy birthday, Air Force. As part of the National Security Act on September 18th, 1947. Prior to that, the Army and Navy had their own air forces, by the way. Jimi Hendrix passed away, drug overdose, at the age of 28 on September 18th, 1970. Birthdays include the late pitcher Harvey Haddix, who won a World Series with the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1960. Harvey Haddix would have been 99. Harvey Haddix pitched maybe the greatest game in baseball history. He pitched 12 perfect innings in Milwaukee for the Pirates in 1959, only to lose the game in the bottom of the 13th inning, 1-0. One of my favorites, sadly, he's no longer with us. Dennis Johnson, DJ, would have been 80 on September 18th. 70. I did my math wrong there. DJ would have been 70 on September 18th. He's a Hall of Famer. Passed away right before he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. Larry Bird called him the greatest teammate he ever played with, and that's great praise. Just a glue guy. Won championships with three different teams. Was on that great Celtics team in the mid-80s. DJ missed very much. Hall of Famer Ryne Sandberg of the Chicago Cubs is 66 on September 18th. Actor James Gandolfini, famous for his role in The Sopranos, would have been, 63 years old, born on September 18th, 1961. And actor Jason Sudeikis will be 49 on that day, September 18th. Moving to the 19th, President James A. Garfield, native of Northeast Ohio, died of his wounds that he had suffered in early July, from an assassin's bullet. He died on September 19th, 1881, in New Jersey. Chester Arthur, his vice president at that moment, became president of the United States. Speaking of great TV series, like we were a couple minutes ago, The Mary Tyler Moore Show premiered on CBS September 19th, 1970. CBS ruled the roost for great TV shows, it seemed, in the 1970s. Talmadge Girls Golf Program won their first ever varsity match on September 19th, 2001 versus Kenston at Brookledge Golf Club. Yours truly was the first head coach of the girls as a varsity program. And the THS Boys Golf Team won their third consecutive Suburban League title on September 19th, 2012 at Good Park. Some birthdays for September 19th. Hall of Famer Duke Snider of the Brooklyn Dodgers of the Jackie Robinson teams. Duke Snider, born September 19th, 1926. Adam West, who very famously played Batman on the great campy ABC TV series in the late 1960s. Adam West, born September 19th, 1928. The late Hall of Famer Joe Morgan was born on September 19th, 1943. Jim Abbott, who is quite a story, inspirational as all get out. Jim Abbott pitched a no-hitter in the big leagues despite not having a hand on his right arm. Jim Abbott turns 57. He pitched the U.S. to a gold medal, actually, in the Olympic Games. Happy birthday to him, even though he is a Michigan grad. Matthew Perry sadly passed away about a year and a half ago under suspect circumstances, to say the least. Matthew Perry, born September 19th, 1969. And the host of The Tonight Show, Jimmy Fallon, will be 50. September 20th, this one takes a little bit of explaining. September 20th, 1973 saw a made-for-TV tennis match between the great Billie Jean King and a hustler guy named Bobby Riggs. Bobby Riggs was in his mid-50s, I think, by then. He was going around saying all these chauvinist things and women couldn't play and women could never beat men in sports and all of that kind of stuff. So they arranged a big money match. They put it on prime time on ABC television. Howard Cosell did the play-by-play. It was a big production. It was in the Houston Astrodome, for crying out loud. Billie Jean King defeated him in straight sets. And I watched it. I was like 15-ish years old. It was an event. I wasn't that surprised that she won, but the 15-year-old me did not understand what a moment that was for young girls and women watching that happen on television. That's been cited by so many great female athletes as a moment that really gave them inspiration and hope. I'm 15 years old. What did I know about that? But I now realize what a watershed moment that was for women's sports. On September 20th, 1998, Cal Ripken Jr. of the Baltimore Orioles walked into the manager's office and said, "Skip, don't put me in the lineup." That was news because he had played 2,632 consecutive games. It was his decision. No manager was going to take him out of his own volition. Cal had to make the call, and he did, and he sat out that night. I think it was a Sunday night game, ending his consecutive game streak at 2,632. What a record that is. Birthdays for September 20th. Upton Sinclair, the author who wrote The Jungle, among other things, born September 20th, 1878. Sophia Loren, the actress, turns 90 on September 20th. Former Buckeyes running back and NFLer, Carlos Hyde. Boy, could he run. Could he plow over people. Carlos Hyde will be 34 on September 20th. And the late, great Red Auerbach, the father of the Celtics dynasty, born September 20th, 1917. He coached the Boston Celtics to 9 NBA championships and won several more as general manager. He was the Boston Celtics. You can see him. I can see him in my mind with his cigar lit, staring up at the banners. Happy birthday, Red. He's no longer with us, but he is with the Celtics in spirit and would be pretty happy right now with the Celtics being the world champs. September 21st, Sandra Day O'Connor was confirmed as the first ever woman on the U.S. Supreme Court on September 21st, 1981. Here's how times have changed. The vote in the Senate was 99-0. Partisanship was not then what it is now, and we were better for it then, I do believe. The first ever Monday Night Football telecast on ABC was September 21st, 1970. The game was held in Cleveland. It was the Browns versus Joe Namath and the New York Jets. It was a great experiment by ABC TV and Rune Arledge. They didn't know NFL games had never been played on Monday night before. It was a huge hit. Obviously, Monday Night Football is still around. The game was blacked out here in Northeast Ohio. I remember listening to it on the radio. The Browns won 31-20. You can see highlights on YouTube, if you will. We didn't get to watch that game here, though. That was the crazy blackout rules back then. Birthdays for September 21st. The actor Larry Hagman, who starred in two notable TV series in his career. One was as an astronaut in the sitcom I Dream of Jeannie. And the other one was the nighttime soap opera Dallas. Larry Hagman, born September 21st, 1931. Former Indians pitcher, the flame-throwing lefty Sudden Sam McDowell will be 82 on September 21st. Author Stephen King will be 77. And comedian and actor Bill Murray will be 74. Finally, this week on September 22nd, President Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation on September 22nd, 1862. It was to take effect on January 1st of the following year. He issued it 5 days after the Battle of Antietam, which was seen as a Union victory. He was waiting for a Union battlefield victory before he issued the Emancipation Proclamation, which freed the slaves in the, as it said, states currently in rebellion. He did not free slaves in the so-called border states of Kentucky, his birthplace, of Maryland, etc. He did not want to risk losing those states and having them go over to the Confederacy in the middle of the war. Lincoln was a humanitarian, the great emancipator, but he was also a very shrewd politician. The Soviet Union exploded their first atomic bomb on September 22nd, 1949. At that moment, we were not alone anymore in the atomic club. Pittsburgh Pirates second baseman Rennie Stennett went 7-for-7 in a 9-inning game at Wrigley Field, Chicago, on September 22nd, 1975. He is still the only major league player ever to do so in a 9-inning game. I think somebody did it in an extra inning game, but Rennie Stennett went 7-for-7 in a 9-inning game as the Pirates throttled the Cubs 22-0 that day. That same day, 1975, there was an assassination attempt on President Ford in San Francisco. It was the second assassination attempt against him that month in California. This one was by a woman named Sarah Jane Moore, who has actually been freed from prison. Imagine that. Birthdays include the late Dodger manager. What a great ambassador he was for baseball. Tommy Lasorda, born September 22nd, 1927. Longtime NBA commissioner, the late David Stern, born September 22nd, 1942. And Joan Jett will turn 64, which makes some of us feel a little older, on September 22nd. That's it for our birthdays segment and anniversary segment this week. Let's move to some current events. Number one, as I speak here on Wednesday, the presidential debate was last night between former President Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris. So much for muting the microphones. Wow. Former President Trump would jump in often. They would leave his mic on. I don't think it benefited him very much as I watched. He was very rattled, whatever the case may be, why ever that was, and it showed. He was very jumpy and loud and not really composed. Kamala Harris is a former prosecutor, and she put those skills on display last night. If the debate turns out to be anything other than a boost for her chances, I'll be shocked. I think the Harris campaign is probably really thrilled with how that went in Philadelphia. I also must defend the town of Springfield, Ohio. It's the Springfield near Dayton, not the one a mile away from where I'm sitting in Talmadge, Ohio right now. There was no eating of pets going on, unlike some rumors that spread among conservative circles in the last couple of days from J.D. Vance and others. They implied that immigrants had invaded Springfield, Ohio, and were eating dogs and cats. The city manager of Springfield said, you know, zero of that has happened. I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know what they're talking about either. The stuff just gets, as Tim Wall said, weird. It gets weirder and weirder all the time. Secondly, before we move on to that one, as I record today, it is September 11th, and the ceremonies have taken place in Pennsylvania and Washington and New York City. There is some picture taken in New York this morning of Biden, Harris, Trump, Vance, and others standing side by side at the site of the Twin Towers. Standing with Trump there, however, was a 9/11 denier, one of his aides, Laura Loomer. He took her with him to the anniversary commemoration. I think that's also weird. Moving on, just a follow-up here, quick follow-up on the DirecTV versus Disney ongoing talks. They haven't gone anywhere. As I speak, no settlement has been reached. That has lasted better part of 2 weeks now. They missed the first week of NFL games. They missed Monday Night Football on ESPN. Those of you who have DirecTV, it's unusual that it wasn't settled. We talked about that last week before the football season started. I don't know where that's going, but I know that hundreds of thousands of people who subscribe to DirecTV, as we once did for almost 20 years, have been without all the Disney-owned networks, including ABC, since then. That's a pretty serious deal there. I wonder when they're going to get that settled. All right, the third topic today is an unpleasant one for us Browns fans. It's Deshaun Watson. There is a new sexual assault lawsuit that has been brought against him in the last couple of days, the 27th, by the way, but who's counting? This came on the heels of his lousy week, really. He and the Browns were very bad Sunday against the Dallas Cowboys in Tom Brady's debut on Fox. That week one performance might trash the season before it really gets rolling. I hope not as a Browns fan, but it's just a cloud hanging over the franchise, really. Guilt or innocence, I'm not going to judge. That's ultimately resting with the justice system, as we know. But at what point are the Browns going to cut their losses and cut him loose? I know they owe him an unbelievable amount of money still, but I think the fans in general are sort of getting tired of this deal. He hasn't played that many games since he's been here. This actually leads to one of our three good questions, so I should probably leave it at that. In fairness, Watson denies the latest allegations. The Browns haven't commented on it, really, other than to say he's going to play quarterback this week. It looms over the franchise, as I said. And, I suppose all would be well, as sometimes happens in sports, if he was playing well, but that certainly is not the case, at least for week one. In general, I think quarterbacks and starters should play one of the preseason games. I know it's a trend now not to play any of those people in any of the preseason games by a lot of teams. They're rusty. A lot of players were rusty this past weekend. Okay, enough of that. Let's move on to our three good questions segment. We have a couple of questions here, one from me to you and one from my son, Matt. And then we have an observation that I want to get to from a new listener in Chicago. So let's get to it here. Question number one, and I'll ask this to you. If you want to answer the question, please get in touch with us at our email address. That's threegoodquestions, T-H-R-E-E, goodquestions at gmail.com. Threegoodquestions at gmail.com. Here's my question to you. Recently, there was a pretty big kerfuffle involving, let's just say, one of the presidential candidates at Arlington National Cemetery. I'll just leave it at that, which got me to thinking, and this is a good trivia question, I think, who are the only two presidents buried at Arlington National Cemetery? Who are the only two presidents buried at Arlington? Again, send in your answers if you have one to the email address, and we'll answer it on the podcast next week. Question number two comes from Matt. Where does the Deshaun Watson trade actually rank among the worst moves in modern American sports history? Well, now, I had to do a little research there. Came up with a couple of incidents, and you know, people could argue about these. One long ago, over 100 years ago, was the Boston Red Sox trading Babe Ruth to the New York Yankees for $125,000, which the Red Sox owner then used to finance a Broadway play, No, No, Nanette, or something like that. I don't remember what the play was. Boy, the Red Sox rued that decision for, 80-some years, I'd say. So that was pretty bad. Those of you of a certain age, like me, remember that the Cleveland Cavaliers were once owned by a guy named Ted Stepien. Ted Stepien was a buffoon, really. He traded back-to-back first-round picks for, well, let's be kind, questionable NBA talent at best. One of those first-round picks was used by the Los Angeles Lakers to take a guy by the name of James Worthy out of the University of North Carolina. You know, Cleveland could have had that guy, right? The league actually took pity on the Cavs. I think they wanted to not kill the franchise. And in the mid-1980s, they actually gave the Cavaliers extra draft choices to keep them viable in the league. That's how bad Ted Stepien's ownership was of the Cavs in the early 80s. You can look him up if you want to know more about him. I don't want to talk about him anymore, really. But that came to mind, certainly. There's one trade that came to mind, too, and it's an NFL trade that happened in 1989 between the Dallas Cowboys and the Minnesota Vikings. Dallas traded the great running back Herschel Walker and four draft choices to the Minnesota Vikings. Dallas, in return, got four players and eight draft choices. The draft choices, some of them became the following players: Clayton Holmes, Darren Woodson, Alonzo Highsmith, Russell Maryland, and Hall of Fame running back Emmitt Smith, among others. They got other players and draft choices in that trade. There's an ESPN 30 for 30 about that. It's called The Great Trade Robbery. That's one of the worst transactions in the history of professional sports. So we'll go with those three. There are others, I know, but I didn't want to take an hour, you know, talking about bad moves and bad trades. So let's go with those three, Matt. And, you know, if anybody's got more, let us know. There may be more right there. Number three here, it's not really a question, it's an observation, and we'd like to welcome as a listener Adam Engel, who works at Chicago Community Trust in Chicago. Adam made an observation. He was catching up with the podcast, and in the early days of the podcast this past spring, we talked about court storming in basketball. There was an incident with Kyle Filipowski of Duke getting injured in a court storming in a game they got beat at Wake Forest, I believe. In the early days of basketball, we're talking maybe the 1920s and 30s, the court, as Adam correctly states, was enclosed by a cage. They literally put a cage up around the boundaries of the court to limit probably the effects of fan rowdiness. I don't know. It may have been to keep the ball in the court. I don't know. I think Adam was right, though. It's to probably to limit the effects of fan rowdiness. Basketball fans have always been rowdy, still are. That's where the term cagers came from. Again, some of us older people, they used to use that term a lot in newspapers and magazines. Basketball players were referred to as cagers, and that's where the term came from. That all made me, and thanks, Adam, for that observation, and thanks for tuning in. That made me think of something my father used to tell me. My father was a pretty good high school basketball player, played in college after World War II got in the way, at a college called Davis and Elkins College down in West Virginia. His coach, his assistant coach, was a guy named Press Maravich. You may have heard of his son. My dad, as a ninth grader, played varsity basketball down in West Virginia. He was 6'3", and he played varsity as a freshman because the rule that season, and we're talking about the mid to late 1930s here, was that after every score, free throw or basket, and they were all two-point baskets back then, after every score, they would bring the ball back to center court and jump ball. So if his team would get a basket, get 2 points, they'd have an opportunity to keep possession. And him being 6'3" in rural West Virginia in the mid to late 1930s, his team got a lot of jump balls. They went all the way to the state tournament that year. They then changed the rule after that, and his last 3 years of high school ball, they had pretty much continuous play like we see today. But he was very valuable as a ninth grader because they jumped ball after every basket, every score. I always remember that story that he told me. That's really something. So there we have it. There's the three good questions segment. If you have one, if you have an observation, if you have an answer, again, get in touch with us at the email address, threegoodquestions@gmail.com. That ought to do it for this week. Thanks for tuning in as always. Our audience seems to be growing. It's very humbling and gratifying to me that people come up to me in different cities even now and say, hey, you're the podcast guy. I don't know how that happened, but I'm grateful and thankful that you're all tuning in, picking us there out there in the podcastosphere, as they say. Thanks for choosing us. We'll get back at you next week. I'm John Shomo. This is Then and Now. Everybody have a good weekend and a good week. Thanks.